It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
And good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day out there, a little windy and rainy, but it's still beautiful. Adds to the good days, replenishing. Anyway, I'm excited about this. This is one of those days that you live to look forward to, you just hopefully it comes about, presents itself. It's an opportunity of a lifetime when you're in the trenches and trying to find an explanation as to why things are broken. And many of us out there, we complain about the government. We know something is wrong. But what is it that's wrong? And we can't, you know, and I often joke with my friends who call in and talk about the Bilderberg. And I say with things like we're going to discuss today's show, it's not the Bilderberg. It's to build a prison that would house some of these guys that are in office that has our trust and has a responsibility. But before I go any further with that, let me just say that, you know, last week I discussed with you about local office here of the National Marine Fisheries Service. And they fall under the Department of Commerce, NOAA, National Oceanic Atmosphere Administration. And then they have an inspector general. And I requested some information from the local administrator here, Mr. Michael Tosato. And I must tell you, it was expected because there's a degree of arrogance that is displayed in the National Marine Fisheries Service and Commerce anyway that it's unbearable. most of the time, and to say that and it's not mildly accepted. So their actions have a grand impact on the natural resources, the whales, the marine mammals, other marine mammals, except for the polar bear. That's on another jurisdiction. But we have some serious issues here. And Mr. Tosato, I had inquired and invited him or someone from his office to the show here to discuss the recent death of a mother pup seal and her pups. And basically, he blew me off. I wish I had a better word, more eloquent word to say, but he blew me off. Right? And then boasts about it that I'm a nothing and a nobody, and I understand that. That's when you grow up on the government's tit, then you tend to have that attitude. You know, you get in government, you get promoted, you get to be an officer, and I mean, and you look down your noses at the people that you're serving. But it's okay. But in requesting this information, this was his original response to me. Mr. Cox, I can acknowledge receipt of your email, and I have no comments for you at this time. Now, mind you, I had already asked them a week before, or more than a week, asking that they attend the show or provide some answers to questions. They didn't do that, so it took me to prod them and probe and ask them later. So finally, he gave me a response. Then I asked for clarification. What does he mean by that? So he again writes, I'm sorry, Mr. Cox, I'm sorry, but I have no comments for you at this time. I will check with my staff about FOIA made by you. You can follow up on any file request. So this leads me to today's show. And fortunately, there are people out there, like the guests I have on the show this morning and others, that believe that the system can work and will work. And people like Tosato is just a personal spot in this whole fabric of things. And though he thinks he has a Teflon enamored position, I think that he will soon learn accountability can be had by all people. And to basically, he went back now and has had an all hands, all on deck meeting. And that portion of the meeting was to find out or express concerns that he's going to find out who leaked the Deloitte Touche review to me. And on that note, we're going to talk about something that's developing, and I'm fortunate to have received this. Todd Zinser, the Inspector General of the Department of Commerce, is unfit. These are the words of the Space and Science Technology Committee in Congress. A bipartisan organic committee has found that, through investigations, that the head of the Inspector General of the Department of Commerce has found to be unfit, and they have solicited and requested President Obama fire him or remove him. So if you have the head watchdog beating up on whistleblowers and ignoring and disrespecting the public, then it comes to no surprise. I'm not shocked that a Michael Tosato would behave in such a fashion, because there's no accountability and there's no integrity from top to bottom, back and forth. So with all that said, we're going to have a pretty good conversation, and we'll read some of these letters. And I have invited Miss Liz Mitchell to join me on the show here. And Miss Mitchell is as president of the Association for Professional Observers and Public Employees Environmental Responsibility, also participated in giving a letter to these their complaints they filed with this Todd Zinser. So we're going to have a fun time, hopefully, talking about this. Good morning, Liz, and how are you? Thanks for calling from Eugene, Oregon, right? Hello, Liz.
For having me, and good morning, Carol.
Yes, go ahead, and thank you. Could you introduce yourself for a bit? I attempted to, but I'd rather you tell us who you are and your involvement, if you would, please.
Yeah, I have been with the Association for Professional Observers for about 10 years or so, and we advocate for fisheries observers as because they're usually not well. There's a lot of harassment and that sort of thing, and so they need some you know support.
Now you say fisheries observers. What does that entail? So the listener will get a clear picture before we go and get them confused, really confused. What is the observer program and what's its origin and what's its purpose?
Well, its origin, I think, is because they were not able to get adequate data on the fish being caught. And so before they used to rely on logbooks and so forth, but they found that to be unreliable.
You mean and NIMS? So, NIMS found it to be unreliable?
Yeah, they NIMS said the consuls, and they continue to use it, but it's, anyway, and so they found it necessary to have observers to record the biological data. You know, the fishermen have all kinds of things going on, the weather and maintenance of their vessel and the regulations and so forth. And so probably the least concern they have is for species that don't benefit them financially.
So the observer program is in existence, and all of this comes, is a lot of the rules come out of the Magnuson-Stevenson Act. And
yes.
So basically, the public can't be aboard these vessels. There are many of them. They can't be aboard the vessels. And so as a means of monitoring and observing and trying to mitigate the impacts of certain types of fisheries, whether it's trawl, long line, net fishing, or what have you, they set up this observer program, and then the observers go out, observe the fishing activity, make a log, reduce it to a log book. Is that correct?
Yeah, they do all sorts of things. They
right,
collect data, biological data.
And the intent,
but it's mainly to monitor the fishery.
And the intent is when they're monitoring, they're just not going out there and going, ooh, ah, look at that. They're actually taking this science and this information and putting it back into the system to determine the bycatch, the incidental take, the things that may be the non-targeted species, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yes. And they're also some of the objectives of different observer. We have observer programs all over the United States and the world. And they have different objectives, and some, but most of them include reporting on compliance to regulations.
So this observer program, your organization, that is represent and is looking out for the interests of the observers, you actually file a complaint with the Office of Inspector General on behalf of a gentleman, and you can give the details. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes. And, you know, also what we're concerned about is that observers are able to report on these things because they're often at odds with the objectives of the boat, and so we want to make sure that they're able, that they have adequate support so that they can provide an unbiased, independent source of information on the fishery.
Mm-hmm. So this complaint, this complaint that you filed on behalf, what was the gentleman's name? And it was filed in 2011 December, correct, with the Inspector General?
Yes.
Let's speak specifically to this complaint for a bit, if you could. Was it? And if we could go through that complaint, you know it is better than I. And tell us some of the concerns that were raised, and the complaint contains some of the elements of that complaint. And then if you could, was this ever resolved? Did the Inspector General give this a good treatment, or was it handled like anything else would be handled, as we've come to learn in OIG and NIMS?
It began in 2011 when John Combs, a fisheries observer, he was a experienced fisheries observer in Hawaii and Alaska, and finally he was working in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. And he originally came to us to report that NIMS wasn't, you know, they weren't enforcing the law that requires equal accommodation to observers as that of the crew. Observers were, you know, sleeping on the galley floor, and that kind of thing. They weren't enforcing that law. So he wrote me originally to say mm-hmm. that. And then we, as it unfolded, more and more things came out, and it turns out he was reporting fisheries violations, and the program staff, the NIMS program staff, were not, not only were they not reporting it to the enforcement, but they were telling observers that some of, you know, that these things will go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that was awful, because
right.
that's, you know, and they were also subjecting them to unsafe conditions,
mm-hmm.
We felt. You know, they have a certain list of safety precautions. They go through the vessel and make sure they have certain life life rafts, and that the maintenance is all up to date and that sort of thing. And so observers were, they were ignoring those things.
Let me hold on 1 second. Uh-huh. When you say they, if you would, remember that
yep.
there's a listeners
yeah.
out there, and when we
yeah.
go they, is it John, is it
okay.
your?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's, if you could, put a face with the name or agency with the
okay.
action, because it's, even me, I'm sitting here trying to keep up as to who the theys are. So if you could, these issues that were brought in the complaint, and I'll just go through a few of them, and then we can grab hold of much of this. This enclosed, you filed it in, he filed this with you folks in November 18, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Combs, a fisheries observer with POP. And what is POP?
Pelagic Observer Program.
Okay.
Miami.
Okay.
So there's several observer programs.
Okay, I understand, but so that we don't want to throw all 10,000 of them in one statement, so if you, because we'll leave here confused. The POP, he said that he originally sent a similar statement with more details to the National Observer Program on that same day. His statement reflects that the other fisheries observers have also reported. So he's not just one party complaining about this. He's indicating
yeah.
that several. And did you later, were you able to confirm that through interviews and all that other observers had, in fact, shared the same concerns?
Yes. After I heard from John, I reached out to other observers, and I spoke to some.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have to remain anonymous, of course. And so... they were reporting the same things, that there's just a general lack of concern for the fish, reporting fisheries violations.
Right, and general would be, even though it sounds general, a lot of this stuff would be safety concerns. Where they, before they go out on the boat, they're to inspect it to make sure, take a list of things, and you know,
mm-hmm.
such as life raft. So these are life and death matters. So there,
yeah.
even though we say general. But this, again, one of the complaints were failure on John's statement of failure to report major marine resource violation. In contrast with the POP, the NMFS, FS, the National Marine Fisheries Service, North Pacific Ground Fish Observer Program, outlines for observers in their field manual their role in regulatory compliance and instructs the observer how to legally document and emphasizing violations. Observers in the NPGOP are asked during the briefing if they witness any violations. If so, they are instructed to write an affidavit for NIMS enforcement, and the case is then pursued. POP provides no similar guidance to observers should they witness a violation. So can you explain that when you in this complaint it says that the ground fish require them to do certain things and ask them to report certain things, but in the POP they don't. And can you explain that what that is also what is the disadvantage of and the downside of not having those reports in POP?
Well, every observer program manages their program differently, and that's part of the problem that we have with NIMS, the National Observer Program, the NOP, is that they're trying to, they should be providing standards, and they do have standards, but none of the observer programs are required to follow them. So you have the North Pacific program that is much more detailed in their reporting of violations, and they have a lot more support. But it appeared in the Southeast programs, not just the POP, but others as well, that they were not reporting violations. And it's just a matter of who's running the program. Really.
Now,
so that was our goal, was to promote standards.
Okay, right now you were filing a complaint with the Inspector General's office regarding an illegal act that this person was claiming. You really weren't advocating in this letter
not yet,
but so that's why I'm trying to adhere to this in that way it'll be a clear picture. In this,
okay.
Observers reported that Mr. Larry Beer Kircher, who was the NIMS trainer and debriefer for the POP program until last year. The statement now, this is the complaint that you folks wrote and filed with the Inspector Generals, told observers during two separate trainings that they would witness fisheries violation such as shark finning, and that's taking fins off live sharks and discarding the mutilated animals, and marine pollution, MARPO, but that these violations were not of interest to the POP. He told them that, quote, if you have a problem with MARPO violations, you better get out of the program now, end quote. Mr. Beercher said that it was just the, quote, culture of the fishermen, end quote, and that they, observers, should just accept that. Is any comment with that?
Well, obviously we were appalled to read that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never held accountable for that, for saying that. It never came into the resulting report from NIMS.
One second. With NIMS, this complaint was filed with the IG initially.
Right.
And so the IG did nothing, and I want to make that clear, did nothing on this report or did something but never released any reports. And then subsequently, a year later, how long did they sit on it? Did the IG have it in their hands?
Approximately. Only a month.
Pardon me?
Only a month. We filed it December 1st, 2011 with OIG, and then January 9th, 2012, they referred the case over to NIMS. They didn't even look at it. They just referred it.
And this is to investigate themselves. This is again the whistleblower blowing the whistle, and your agency, your organization, taking an interest in this because you know the bad side of the bad reporting and the fatal reporting and the dangers that exist in this observer program. So the Inspector General did nothing, but then passed it on to NIMS, who would be self-policing themselves, because that's where the complaints were about, right?
Right, and that was just, well, that whole process since December 2011 has just been a series of disappointments. So that was the first one that and then we were told, promise by both NIMS and the OIG, that the Southeast would not be a part of that investigation because we really wanted an unbiased inquiry.
Mm-hmm. So this complaint, so that what, you know, we now know that, how long did NIMS take to respond back to you folks after they received it from the Inspector General?
Let's see. It was a couple years.
What?
2 years. Yeah, 2 years.
A couple of years to respond to this one complaint?
Yes.
Do they still call it the National Marine Fisheries Service, or is it the United States still the United States? 2 years, a lot of things.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's see here. It took 2 years, and they gave us their results in April 2013.
And basically, we're going to go back to the complaint, but basically, what was their finding? Well, I'm reluctant to say, describe it as findings. What was their lies or excuses that they rendered?
Well, they actually agreed on some parts.
Of your complaint?
Yes.
Okay.
And they came up with several actions.
Okay.
For the Southeast to come out, you know, to address, and then they put the report on the National Observer Program website, but the OIG told them to take it down, and told them to expand the investigation nationwide to do a review of all the observer programs.
Now you say the. Clarifying, you say the OIP or OIG?
OIG, the Office of Inspector General. Yeah.
Okay, so
then... under Todd Zinser.
Okay, right? so first of all, you file the complaint with OIG, and the OIG, the OIG then gives it to NIMS, who takes 2 years, as you describe, and then...
Well, a year and a half,
no,
I should say,
okay.
December...
A year and a half and 5 minutes or whatever. The point is, I'm trying to get a little more clear of answers because I'm having a hard time. This is so good that it speaks for itself, to be honest with you. You guys wrote an awesome complaint. For NIMS to blow you off this way, welcome to the club, I should say.
I know.
Welcome.
That's what it felt like. It felt like a complete blow-off.
Well, it is. I mean, this is the arrogance, because as we're going to talk later about Congress's decision and conclusions through their investigation, that this man is unfit in asking the president to be removed or fired. This is the Carol Cox Show. You're listening to a discussion with Mrs. Elizabeth Mitchell. And we're here talking about observer programs and NOAA and NIMS and the Department of OIG and Department of Commerce. And Liz is the president of the Association for the Professional Observers. But I want to get back to one of the key things here in the Mr. Jonathan's Combs complaint that you guys file with the OIG. And this is frightening. This is regarding this gentleman, Bircher, as you guys are alleging here. Mm-hmm. He specifically instructed them to enter violations into their field diaries so that NIMS would legally be covered, but were told that the violations would not be pursued unless someone asked for them for the information. Moreover, the field diaries would not likely be examined because they were told that there is no communication between the POP and the other agencies, or even between departments of their own agency.
Right.
So, did NIMS respond to that specific element in the complaint, or did they?
Well, yes, they found that they didn't have a protocol to deal with violations, and so they. That was the first action that they were supposed to have done by September 30th, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to develop a uniform, transparent, and consistent procedure for collecting and reporting all potential marine resource violations.
And did they implement that? Did that occur?
A year later.
Okay, so that's all in the works now. And so the
The observers are snug as a bug in a rug now, or is it still problematic throughout?
Well, the downside of this, you know, whole investigation and is that observers became pretty fearful to come forward.
The observers?
The ones who were, you know, John's colleagues. Because they saw what, you know, what NIMS could do to John.
Mm-hmm.
And the maddening thing is that he had this problem with NIMS. And the OIG, both the OIG and the final determination in his wrongful firing determined that it was the contractor that didn't fire him for they avoided the question.
The game of passing the buck and responsibility, but still stabbing him and cutting his throat, and that the IG gets the original complaint, it then sits on it for a month or so, then passes on to NIMS. NIMS gets to investigate itself, because that's why you appealed to the IG. You wanted an independent investigation, correct?
Yes.
Obviously, that's what you wanted, or you would have filed it with NIMS. And so NIMS take it upon themselves, and then they, in turn, in this one particular element of the complaint, then say that it's not our fault. We didn't fire him. They passed the buck to say that, like the IG passed it to them. They said it's the contractor, but yet it's NOAA's business. It's NOAA's interest.
Yeah.
It's NOAA's contract that they're fulfilling. So
right.
How can they divest themselves of these responsibilities?
This is our work, you know, the APO's work, is that observers find themselves in this precarious position where they're directed by NIMS. They have a tremendous impact on their work environment, and yet they are paid by a contractor, and so NIMS avoids any responsibility for their welfare. So that's one thing, and in that way they were able to avoid responsibility for retaliation against John for reporting these violations.
Through my work in this for so many years, I tend not, it's not a disagreement, but to say that one, no matter what NIMS does, they do not divest themselves of this responsibility.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, the mission is their mission, and they are using the contractor solely as an implement that in theory was to, because they don't have the expertise on staff and they don't have the ability to do this, and so they ask Congress or the legislators for monies to fund these programs. That does not mean that the fishermen can take the observer out there and shoot them in the head and drown them, and then NIMS says, well, it was a contractor who did it. We're not responsible. So I think it's some disinformation. They are responsible, period. And I think that more than likely if it was challenged in court or taken, and I think it's in their actions speaks that they know they're responsible. They know that, you know, because why would they go through these gyrations of trying to pass the buck and hide it in the shell game? And that's what it is, and that's what we're experiencing out here with the Monk Seal. Contractors standing up and being the mouthpiece, and it's when you approach NIMS, oh, we don't have any comment to say anything to you,
right,
then what's your purpose? So,
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, well, I hope you're with me on all of these because you filed a complaint. I'm just reading what you filed. So, and we've known one another for a long time, and it's been painful, whether it's bird bycatch or interaction of birds or non-targeted species or protected species. We've been there, done that, and it's been painful. And so when these things present themselves and they come together, I'm excited. I mean, I'm like the little boy with a new toy. It is because this is, it's our responsibility now not to be naggers and complainers, but to convey that if Congress catches on to this game and Congress, a bipartisan committee, states that, Mr. President, we think you should remove this guy because he is unfit. And we're going to discuss some of the greater details. And there's similarly a parallel to what the people like Tosato and Robinson and all those people that have come here to Hawaii and managed and been just to serve the grand god of Pacific Fisheries Council. You see, and that's what has happened. We don't know the real impact on our resources out there, the marine mammals, the whales, and all. And then how dare them to present and propose that give consideration to removing the population of whales from the endangered species and downgrading them. And when you got your the head person who heads the Office of Integrity, we'll call it, the OIG, is being asked to resign or get fired for his unethical practices, and they are substantial. But again, if you have no management up top and no accountability and no one being held accountable, guess what you get, Liz? You get a year and a half investigation on things that could be resolved in a matter of days, and they would own up to it. It's our responsibility. The contractor is just taking our monies to get the daily activities done, but we are still the responsible party because it's our program, right? So, subject of fisheries observers unsafe condition, Mr. Combs describes, and okay, here's, I jumped one. When Mr. Combs reported shark finning on a vessel that was contracted by NIMS for bycatch mitigation study on hook design, Mr. Buechrichter chuckled, chuckled at the fact that the boat did it while the observer was on board and while they were working under a government contract. As far as he knew, this was not reported to NIMS enforcement. So they were, in this complaint, you're suggesting that the man that works for NIMS, correct, was he a contractor?
No, he was a NIMS employee a long time.
Right.
He was actually on the National Observer Program Advisory.
Okay. Okay. So then, if he is the he is a supervisor for this program, and he is having direct contact with the observers, how then can NIMS turn around and say, well, it's not our responsibility, it's the contract responsibility? You see the nonsense?
I know.
Yeah.
It's very, very frustrating.
Well,
to see them pass the buck like that.
And so some of these, this complaint contained concerns that the observers were what subjected to conditions they should provide. I notice in some of the write-ups is that they must provide the same food types of food that the crew is fed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same quality and all, but and then also a bed or bunk should be made available. But in this complaint and speaking with you, you say that on many occasions, the observer is not provided a room and there's or a bunk, and they had to sleep on the floor where the people are still awake and sitting over them and smoking cigarettes.
Stepping over them, smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, organizational concerns in this complaint. In fact, observers are informed of these conditions before being hired. This is what was said, but organizational concerns. The root causes for the above substantive concerns stems from organizational dysfunction that is within the purview of the OIG, you say in their complaint. Those root causes include, one, the lack of whistleblower protection for observers, including the likelihood of removal without cause and blackballing. Mr. Combs' Exhibit A, as you indicated, not surprisingly, observers are reluctant to come forward for fear of reprisal, because they will be fired. But again, as we talk later, this is exactly the attorney, the Inspector General of the Commerce Department actually had his sights trained on whistleblowers and were harassing them and have taken illegal actions as founded by the Congress, the committee. And so this is pretty good stuff. And yeah. NIMS can't shake this one. They might stand out there with a billboard and say, it's not our responsibility, it's theirs. Yeah. But I think the public right. will be able to hold them accountable on this
well,
occasion.
Yeah.
The lack... go ahead.
Oh, I was saying the fact that Zinsser was under investigation during this time, it's no surprise that we got absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, so once you learn this, I don't know if you how familiar you are with this, but isn't it, it comes as a shock that while you folk are filing a complaint asking Zinsser to take an action because NIMS is taking action, illegal action against one of the observers or several of the observers, and you're appealing to the OIG, and the OIG is on investigation for assaulting the rights of whistleblowers itself.
That doesn't,
yeah. mm-hmm. It doesn't make for good good governance, you know. And so,
no.
Anyway, the hostile work environment, not only on the vessels, but also with NIMS, the lack of concern
yeah.
for fisheries by law by NIMS is contrary to the public trust, which wrongly assumes that NIMS monitoring programs are ensuring compliance with fisheries regulation. It also appears that this program is severely out of line with NIMS national standards regarding observer welfare and safety. Now, this is just this one program now, and this one individual. Is there other areas that have these same problems, or is it right across the board?
It's becoming more and more common
mm-hmm.
where observers are unfairly treated by the agency, but also by the fishermen, because what NIMS is doing is trying to, they've ignored all the, well, not all, but many of the rights issues that we've brought up over the years, and kind of swept them under the rug, tried to release themselves from responsibility by placing, vetting it to the contractors, that kind of thing. And meanwhile, there's this intense pressure from the industry to implement electronic monitoring, which is, there's many different kinds of EM, but the kind that concerns us is that they want to use cameras in place of observers. And so rather than address the issues that we've raised about basic human rights of these observers, they're, you know, kind of looking towards this EM to solve the observer problem mm-hmm. as they call it.
So the observer program, what is, at the end of the day, if I were to pick up, what is the benefit of having an observer program? Why does it exist, as I asked earlier? What is the ultimate purpose being served here with these observers? What is at stake here if we have no observers or have a dysfunctional observer program, and if we then decide to go with an electronic monitoring, what is at stake?
Well, that's kind of two different questions there, but
we'll answer both.
Okay. The purpose of the program. Here's some. Yeah. Okay. The purpose of the observer program is to provide an unbiased, independent source of data on real, live data on the catch, not just the commercially valuable species, but also all the bycatch. So things that animals that the fishermen really don't care about, and so they haven't shown to be a reliable source of data for all the species. And we need that because we want to know the impact of various fisheries mm-hmm. on the marine environment.
Right. And
so
and,
without, yeah.
And so that question, then the purpose is to, it's not just to go out and look at the fish and identify them as species and come back and say we had a thousand different types, but it's also the management to determine if this type of fisheries can sustain itself or will it deplete yeah. the species to a point that it is unmanageable or will deplete the species, drive it into extinction or whatever. Is that one of the goals of this
program? Oh, yeah.
And
so
it's big.
It's varied objectives, but also to determine the impact on other fisheries.
Well, I got that.
I
got that. I'm just trying for the listener to understand that we're not just pissing and moaning about the fact that the observers are being treated badly. I'm trying to help me explain to the public why is it so critical that a program of this nature should be able to stand up to scrutiny, not be eroded, and its rights and its product be eroded by nonsense. That's basically what we're talking about. It's not we're worried about the observer and their feelings and their safety, but ultimately we've said you can engage in this fishing activity for this targeted species or these targeted species in this fisheries, but we're concerned that at some point we want to know the population, we want to know the types, we want to know the maturation and all of that, and in turn, if there is a need, we will take this information, if it's honest and true, and use that in the managing and determining if we can allow the fisheries to continue or cause it to be stopped or allow it to be intermittently used or caught. Is that correct?
Yes.
So,
Go ahead.
So anyway, that's that part of the question. So for the listener to understand, this is why we are so concerned about a program that has integrity, that cannot be challenged or tainted with this nonsense about, well, if you see these violations and if you can't take that site, then you need to get out of the program now. He's not earning his paycheck with that kind of training. So what's the second part of that question you were talking about?
About the EM and the impacts of EM. Well, EM, they're really trying to ram that stuff in without review because they keep claiming that it's cheaper than observers.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been no cost analysis done to really make sure that that's a true statement.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're worried about with the EM is that it's more easily they can manipulate it more easily,
mm-hmm.
and they can manipulate the equipment, and that the data is going to be difficult to, filter out, go to provide for the public to see this.
Or provide to the, there's a list of problems that exist with NOAA anyway, with the NIMS, and that is, most of the people, not all now, but most of the people that I've interacted with that are biologists, and they serve a different god. They serve the council. They serve Danny Noy when Danny Noy was alive. They serve Danny Noy's people, and they will lie, steal, and cheat, and I will say to you, that sounds like a reckless and disrespectful statement, but I have those documents and those proofs that they will lie when given the opportunity and to protect the fisheries, when in fact it's not protecting the fisheries, because at the rate of not managing it properly, not monitoring it properly, it will self-implode. Eventually, you'll fish yourself out of a fisheries, like the lobster fisheries in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands is proof. We overfished it and then in turn found ourselves giving in to the fishermen to allow them to take female lobster, and then they were taking lots of octopi, which is critical, those two species are critical to the development of monk seals, and then the food rate availability is depleted or diminished to a point that the carrying capacity is exceeded by the population, and on and on and on. So what do? They allow this fisheries to implode on itself, destroy itself, and then in turn, we pay them money to buy them out of the fisheries. You know? So
this is the commerce side of the
natural resources management. You know, we get the buck first. You know, no, this isn't terrestrial. This is pelagic. We don't look at the buck is not something important here. The buck is important on land. You know, if you're dealing with hunters, but the buck here is, should have no influence. It's the management of the species, because removing lobsters, for example, out of that, or the reducing the population of octopi actually contributes to the decline in the future, or the bad numbers that we have now in population of marine mammal or monk seals. So anyway, this electronic monitoring, so that people will know, we already have some semblance of electronic monitoring, correct?
It is many different kinds. It covers everything from vessel monitoring system, which is a link between the vessel and a GPS,
right,
that NIMS has, so that they can tell where a boat is. There's electronic reporting.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that we're mainly concerned with are the ones, as the cameras that NIMS and the industry are trying to say will do the same thing that the observers can do, which is totally
all electronic monitoring has its flaws. First of all, let's start with the basics. The VMS, Vessel Monitoring System. NIMS does not have a boat to respond. NIMS does not have an airplane to respond out here. NIMS has to piggyback with the Coast Guard, and thank God for the Coast Guard, or we probably wouldn't see a single whale or a dolphin floating again, because NIMS doesn't have any vessels to go out to sea that are seaworthy, that could go out these long distances and go to the 400 miles of the 7-day trip to monitor these animals, these boats. So let's hear it for the Coast Guard, but I know that NIMS can claim, well, that's part of the scheme, is to use the Coast Guard. But it should be, if NIMS is going to be that loosely operating and with such a responsibility, they should have their own vessels and they should have their own enforcement that would be able to respond immediately, right?
Well,
so, you know,
that would be nice.
And I mean, okay, Coast Guard gets a monitoring and the beep goes off and they've gone into the zone. But what species, do they get rid of the species? It does not tell how many birds were taken in there, because, first of all, they're not going to tell you how many birds they killed because they're in the zone illegally, right? You think they're going to put down, we killed 10 birds at this latitude?
Oh, absolutely not.
Right.
No, I mean, that's no-brainer. That's why we need observers, is because we need that independent, unbiased source of information about what's going on out there.
Right. Well, you're listening to the Carol Cox Show, and my guest is Liz Mitchell, and we're going to be right back. You still going to hang in here with me?
Sure.
Okay, well, hold on, and we'll be back in about 5.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. We're having a good discussion here on the National Marine Fisheries Service under the Department of Commerce. And NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And we're talking about fish and something being fishy. We've all come to learn. And we, as much as we'd like to, we ultimately strive to have a government that we can trust. But, you know, as always, something goes wrong, and that's why we have people like myself sitting here trying to bring it to light and bring some transparency of the corrupted aspect of these agencies and their willingness to lend themselves to corruption and just outright disrespectful to the taxpayer whom they serve. And I don't mean in a negative way or demeaning fashion that they serve, but you step up to the plate, you put your hand up there, and you take an oath that you're going to uphold the laws and respect the laws and operate in those confines, and then you gravitate to the lower, darker side of life. You may be getting away with a little bit, but you're harming all of us, and we're just not going to tolerate it. And so what we are doing now, I have Elizabeth Mitchell, Miss Elizabeth Mitchell, president of the Association for Professional Observers, and we've been talking, and again, you can pick this up later, about 20 minutes after the show ends, on carolcox.com, the podcast. And you can also pick up live right now at carolcox.com or kwai1080am.com. So tune in and feel free to send us an email or comments. Liz, good morning again. Welcome back.
Good morning.
All right.
Thank you.
So as I had threatened to talk about this, and we talked yesterday and the day before, because I'm excited. This is good, seeing good government. And I'll describe it as that. This is, I'm looking at a letter from the Congress. The head is Congress of the United States, House of Representatives, from the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. It was authored July 16, 2014, and it was signed on by a number of people, and especially Representative Edie Bernice Johnson of Texas, and Lamar Smith, and Representative Paul Braun, M.D., Representative James Sensenbrenner, Bill Posey, Representative Kevin Kramer, Bill Johnson, subcommittee, Scott Peters, Swalwell, Dan Maffei. Now, this report is, you know, every day we struggle, right, Liz, and try to bring some fairness and seek justice for the observers or the animals or do what's right. And we find ourselves struggling and being brushed off many times. Is that correct? Do you have that same experience?
Oh, yes, for the last 3 years.
Boy, you have a that's sustainability. 20 years.
Yeah, but that's the, you know, that's the par for the course.
And we're looking for days like this that something lands in our hands. So anyway, this letter is to Mr. Todd J. Zinger, written by the congressional staff that I mentioned to you. And Mr. Zinger is the Office of Inspector General. He is the man, the Inspector General. He is, and as this letter will point out, who he is and what he is and what he will lend himself to. They state, dear Mr. Zinser, Inspectors General, IGs, are given enormous power to act as eyes and ears for Congress within their agencies and to hold officials accountable for their compliance with the law. Officials is a loose word, but I will insert hold Michael Tosato in responsible, right? Make sure accountable with the law. As a central cog in the broad accountability community that protects the taxpayers' interest and contributes to a vital and responsive government, an inspector general must maintain the highest standard of legal conduct in their own office. Get that? Their own office. This committee's expectations for inspector generals go beyond simple adherence to the law to a broader expectation that an IG will have a sense of justice, fair play, and manifest ethical bearings that inspires others to remain cognizant that we all serve the people and we are all servants of the law. When an IG cannot effectively serve as a watchdog due to their own illegal conduct or lack of ethical groundings, that IG cannot maintain the trust and confidence of the Congress, agency employees, or the public. That's you and me, Liz. Your two immediate predecessors at the Department of Commerce both learned this the hard way. So you have any comments? You have this letter in hand, too. What do you think? How does this, once you get a copy of this and learn of this, is it something, does it excite you? Does it give you hope or what?
It's very nice. That's the idea. They've got the idea. They nailed it. But unfortunately, they're not following it, and neither is NIMS. I feel NIMS in that same regard, too. They need to have a sense of justice, fair play, and manifest an ethical bearing.
You say they, you mean the Congress or they being the OIG?
NIMS and the OIG.
Okay.
And I'm just saying that neither one of them, from my experience with this investigation, they've all failed in that.
This is so cool because it speaks specifically to what you're trying to raise as an issue on behalf of the rights of those observers. And many times you've, even yourself personally, you were an observer, correct? And you did experience some unfair treatment and illegal treatment in the treatment of you as an employee as well as an observer.
Yes.
You know, so I would rather just read this. The office of here at the let me just make sure we stay the prior written internal policy. This is going back to the July 16, 2014 letter from Congress to Todd Zinser, the Inspector General. Prior written internal policy statement sent out by you suggests that you understand all of this as the guidelines for disciplinary penalties created in your office and issued by you in June of 2011. This guy's been around, and this was during the time that you filed a complaint, correct?
Yeah, it's all the same time.
And they go on further to points out that law enforcement-related personnel occupy positions of public trust and are held to a higher standard of conduct with respect to their offices. The OIG may reasonably determine that the efficiency of its service to the public
would deteriorate should it cast a blind eye on malfactions of its own employees. Your response to our letter in April 1 suggests that misconduct will not just be ignored by you, it will be defended by you with vigor. The letter highlights established a high ethical legal standards of conduct that would inspire your office or your agency. The Office of Special Counsel conducted an investigation into your two closest advisors in response to credible allegations that you engaged in prohibited personnel practices. Wow.
Yeah.
And this is what while you're appealing to his office, Congress is citing him and investigating him and finding that he is as unethical as the people you are complaining about, right?
So yeah. Yes, and we also don't, as observers, we don't have the option of going to the Office of Special Counsel, or otherwise we would have.
You would have gone there.
Yeah. But the OIG is supposed to be our only avenue, and it's very, very disappointing.
Yeah. While the OSC, this letter says, that while the OSC found no, quote, documentary evidence, end quote, regarding your personal involvement, they did find strong and compelling evidence that your two top advisors retaliated against whistleblowers. And this is exactly what you're writing him about, appealing to his office. And these people would have had say over your complaint and would have assigned investigators to this. But if they're up bashing their own employees for whistleblowing, sounds like a win-win-win situation for them,
well,
right?
Yeah, I'm sure that they just passed it off to NIMS because they just couldn't deal with it.
But
they didn't have the time because they were being investigated themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, incredibly, these advisors were your chief legal counsel and head of whistleblower protection. Based on the conduct your senior managers engaged in and unambiguously documented by the OSC investigative report, your own internal disciplinary policies approved and endorsed by you call for their suspension and possible removal from office. You have done neither. Your response to our inquiry raises a question about whether OSC should have dug deeper into your personal involvement instead of expressing contrition, acknowledging the seriousness of your top advisor's conduct, and taking steps to clean your office of this ethical taint. You provided the committee with a further defamatory comments about the victims who sought relief from OSC. Their victimization under your signature continues as you try to save the careers of your senior managers. Wow.
Yeah.
And
top to bottom.
So maybe if this gets in the hands of some of your local representative from Oregon, or it would be nice if our representative here would approach this and say that maybe there should be, your specific case should be reinvestigated. Revisited. Are you going to seek that?
Yeah. Yes. And also, I would advise any of your listeners from different states to, help us out by asking for that our case to be reinvestigated, because they missed so many facts and just brushed it off, not only this case, but also the we had three wrongful firing cases.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is something watching over you guys, because whoever leaked this to me must have known that they were going to make my day, that Clint Eastwood. I don't know how they know me so well, but this was like, wow, Christmas came early, because I've rarely seen any documents like this that speaks out, and it's current. There's another one now, and one to the president, and I'll read that in a little bit. But again, now, this is how tricky and how tacky this OIG office is. Your lack of action, the Congress states, your lack of action to address this matter, coupled with your letter, led us to wonder about your own experience with OSC and your history of conduct towards whistleblowers.
Consequently, we have begun to inquire into the nature of your relationship with your top aides, since you seem willing to harm your own standings to protect them. In other words, my friends are more important than me. So that suggests that there's something really dirty that your friends have on you, right? Something. The committee has learned that in 1996, when you were the Deputy Assistant Inspector General for Investigations, the Department of Transportation found that you retaliated against a member of your staff, Mr. John Deans, a criminal investigator with the DOT IG's office and former FBI agent. So they don't care who he'll beat up on anyone, right? So here come Liz with her, well, you know, I'm really concerned, and we're asking you to look into it. I can imagine what he was thinking when he received your, I won't go there. you think you got a worthy response or treatment, or your complaint really was met with a meaningful consideration? Because it is about whistleblowing.
It's just shocking to us that such a large and expansive, assault on the justice of, programs was completely ignored.
Yeah, and, this letter goes on to say, Mr. Deans had discovered potential misconduct within the high levels of the Transportation Department and sought to bring it to light. You reacted to that by removing him. And then, quote, not for legitimate reasons, Congress said, but for his whistleblower activities and for exercising his right to free speech, end quote. When ordered by the Merit System Protection Board to reinstate Dean in his previous post, you responded by ordering that he be placed on administrative leave for 6 weeks. This is something that I believe this guy, Michael Tosato, the king of the oceans here in the Pacific, would do. Because you don't take the liberty to write me back and I ask you, could you respond in a certain deadline because of a radio show and courteously invite you, and you write me back and tell, I ain't got no answers for you at this time. Okay, well, am I supposed to wait until, what, the next 100-year flood? Or, you know. But again, this behavior that we see in Tosato and his predecessors and even some of his underlings is consistent with, and the message was well received from the top, screw the public. Mm-hmm. You see, that's what it really, yeah. That's the message, because I can't imagine this man would behave, Zinser would behave in such a fashion and be documented. And then when it came to your complaint, Nims, I want you to treat this case with the greatest importance and give it the best investigation that you can. I don't believe that environment existed, and I don't believe he was motivated in that vein to say to Nims.
No, absolutely not.
But I could be wrong now, I don't know.
Well, we got nothing from OIG, nothing.
In the meantime, we still have people out there that are getting on boats and going through the motions, subjecting themselves to these conditions, and they have no one with integrity to oversee them and putting them in harm's way and putting even the crews on the fishing vessels. If they are documenting it's unsafe and they're still compelled to go out, even the fishermen, but I guess they rely on the Coast Guard to come and pluck them out, you know, so there'd be a show in the evening of, you know, rescue or something. You know how those shows are. They go on to say, this is what's really impressive about this congressional letter to Zinser. Even if there were no other examples of your personal involvement in retaliating against whistleblowers, this one example from 1996 is so shocking that it raises questions about the thoroughness of the review of your records when you were confirmed to your post as Inspector General of the Commerce Department. From a legal perspective, you and now your two closest advisors could all be considered
get this now. This is the first time I may have overlooked it in growing up. But it could all be considered, quote, giglio impaired, end quote, having built an official record that casts doubt on your reliability, veracity, trustworthiness, and ethical conduct. It is also striking how similar this 1996 case is to the recent conduct of your top advisors and your reactions to OSC's findings in that case. At its heart, in both cases, we find an effort by senior IG officials to silence investigators by attempting to derail their careers. Your conduct in 1996 appears to be the model for the conduct of your closest advisors during their retaliatory actions in 2011. Wow. So you got anything to add to that or pitch into this?
Well, I sure wish these guys were on our team.
But they are.
I mean, well, I don't know. We attempted to contact Congress about all this stuff and really got nowhere with them.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to, I'm not ready to give up yet. I'll submit it again. I'll write a letter to all these people and see if we can get somewhere because obviously they did the same thing to our report that he did to their own employees.
Yeah, I would think Congress, this committee, Committee on Science and Space and Technology would be quite interested because not that they're on a scavenger hunt, it's just that they're looking for facts and apparently something's badly broken at the system. But going on with this letter of 2014, curiously, however, you failed to inform Congress of the 1996 OSC case that clearly did establish wrongdoing and whistleblower retaliation by you. There is no reasonable explanation for lack of disclosure during your confirmation hearing, and it raises serious questions as to your public candor and honesty with Congress. Now, I love my man Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. I mean, you know, it'd be hard for me to sit here and say to you that I don't like him, and I'm not going to tell you that. I like what has come with it, what we've accomplished as a country, and all those social issues that we're nibbling at away, eroding them away, those bad, ugly things. But in this one, I'm hoping that this president, Barack Obama, don't hesitate to, one, fire this dude, send him on his way, you know, and in doing so, call for a major private investigation, right?
Yeah.
One that would look at
all their investigations.
Because you may not be privy to the other complaints that are out there, right? Convene an investigation, a committee, to a task force to look, because ultimately, yes, people are getting hurt, but ultimately our natural resources, endangered species, turtles, whales, and all of those things are being impacted, and fish.
Well, it has a chilling effect on those who are required to report it, you know, the observers. So.
Yeah, so they discovered that at least one of those officials, Richard Rick Beitel, is a close personal friend. Mr. Beitel, the former principal assistant inspector general of the General for Investigations and Whistleblower Protection, whom the OSC found engaged in retaliation against whistleblowers, served with the Department of Transportation. That man was widely viewed by your protege to be your protege by staff in the DOT IG's office. The two of you have worked together since 1992 when he joined the DOT IG staff. It turns out that he is far more than just a protege. A court document from 2005 action found him affirming as a witness for you that he considered himself to be your, quote, close friend and personal confidant. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of nepotism going on.
Yeah, and so the buck stops here at that IG door. Sounds like a factory of crime to suppress any claims of mismanagement in any aspect of this whole process, whether it was the observers, whether it was the environmental impact statements. What if, let's just take another situation, which you wouldn't have direct involvement with, but what if you were a biologist and you were asked to do an environmental impact statement or provide a paper or something, or compile the list of birds that are in take, and you were honest about it and you put that information in there, and they then decided, well, we don't want that in there because it would cause the fisheries harm. The fishermen would be impacted. And you put it in there, and then you refuse, and they fire you.
Mm-hmm.
This is... Yeah. Yeah. you understand? The public is not aware. We grow up taught to respect authority. But when authority has this kind of a record, that's not authority. That's something else. And I don't know what it is.
It's abuse.
So,
I mean, it's abuse of power and dishonesty.
Yeah, anyway, this letter, this and all of the letters, and Liz's website, can you give your website for a minute, please, and contact information?
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Mitchell, and the organization is the Association for Professional Observers.
Mm-hmm.
And the website is www.apo-observers.org.
Mm-hmm.
So APO, you know, stands for...
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, and we'll keep up this. And we're going to post all of these letters and a link to your website as well. And hopefully that Mr. Tosado, the god of the seas here in the Pacific, have a little time to stop by and take some time out and provide this information we've requested on the death of these monk seals. We're not going to let it go. I must make this declaration to you that I've also been informed that he actually feels that I'm an insignificant nothing. So it's unfortunate that government trained people to see other human beings that way. And while that all might be true in his assessment, but even an empty can make a lot of noise if you kick it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'd like to add one more thing about Mike Tosado.
Mm-hmm.
Is during that all hands meeting you mentioned it,
mm-hmm.
this last month, he was quoted as saying that we have our FOIA delaying tactics down pat,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Oh yeah, and
so it's they've got a system that avoids public accountability.
Right. And again, you see, this is all related to Kitty Simons with the National Western Pacific Fisheries Council and that group of people concealing. And by the way, what we didn't say is that the observer program information, even though we get it, it's proprietary and treated as secrecy. The general public does not have access to that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, just that is something of great concern of ours, because there is no national standard about how NIMS releases data. It's done on a case-by-case situation, depending on how sensitive the information is,
mm-hmm.
whether they want you to see it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up, it got even more restrictive with the last reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
Right.
And then in 2012, NIMS put out a proposed rule, and it was so restrictive and awful that they got, you know, a lot of comments, over 10,000 comments.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So they've been sitting on that, and they're still in the same situation where they're just, you know, holding tight, waiting for the next reauthorization, which they're going, probably industry is going to match with that awful rule. So I'd say watch that reauthorization act.
Right.
Coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So well, there's bound to be some stuff that is very pro-business and against. Allowing the resources.
Right. So going back to this letter of July 16th written by Congress to Mr. Zinser, OIG, General Office of Inspector General, they say that it has come to our attention that this is not the only senior manager in your office who has been hired under professional cloud. In 2010, one of your former assistant IGs for administration was hired on a 24 hours notice before she was to be terminated from another DOC office and denied her SES status. We understand that your decision to hire her was also based on your personal relationship with her and not her professional credentials. So I don't know what that means, but it suggests that, you know, that office is real close with one another. According to her former managers, you did not even inquire as to what had led them to conclude that she should be fired and denied SES status. Additionally, your former DAIG for audits came out of Fannie Mae and witnessed the worst of the housing market credit bubble. She has been quoted to us by former OIG employees as saying to the IG staff, quote, "You don't know what a bad day is until you have watched the FBI carry your papers out of the office," end quote. Wow. And then, but anyway, this is that letter, and I think that it would be appropriate that, and if we could do something to help you and advocating to have the government revisit these, if not this one, all of them actually, to during his tenure.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have also filed a complaint with his predecessor, and you did get some positive response. It may not have been exactly what you wanted, but was it treated the same way?
Well, APO did not file that complaint, but it was just I don't know who filed it, but the result was an investigation into all the observer programs, another review, and they found that several shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
And but unfortunately, NIMS ignored many of those recommendations. So there's no requirements, and even in NIMS's recent national review of the Observer Program,
mm-hmm.
It was downgraded from actions required to recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, NIMS, yeah. No more serious statements, whatever. But here is another letter from Congress of the United States, and this was written March 31st, 2015. This might interest you, and I forward you a copy of this. The ink is still wet, apparently, but it's to the President of the United States, President Barack Obama. And dear Mr. President, I want to bring to your attention a matter of great concern and some urgency. This concern relates to allegations of misconduct and mismanagement by Department of Commerce Inspector General Todd Zinser. As I related in a March 26, 2015 speech to the House of Representatives, I have determined through a bipartisan investigative effort that the allegations of misconduct and mismanagement by Mr. Zinser are substantially supported by the evidence Congress has uncovered. Specifically, the following findings are highlighted in the attached speech. During his Senate confirmation for the Commerce of IG Pulse, Mr. Zinser failed to disclose a significant case against him involving his personal retaliations against whistleblowers. That key word, I mean, the man that is to protect the whistleblower is blowing them off.
Maybe he didn't understand what it means, whistleblower protection. I don't know. But over a period of many years, Mr. Zinser and his closest staff have engaged in efforts to identify and retaliate against whistleblowers in his office. Mr. Zinser has repeatedly misled the Congress about his conduct and took steps to obstruct the committee's investigation into allegations of misconduct. Mr. Zinser has been disingenuous in his official correspondence with the Council of the Inspector General on Integrity, Efficiency, which is CIGIE, C-I-G-I-E, regarding inappropriate hiring in his office. Mr. Zinser has failed to conduct himself by ethical standards expected of the Inspector General. Mr. Zinser has engaged in inappropriate hiring practice that undermine the integrity of the federal hiring. And Mr. Zinser has failed to establish policies, procedures in his office that would guarantee accountability and efficiency. So, as you can see from my extended remarks, there is ample evidence of misconduct and mismanagement by IG Todd Zinser. Based on this evidence, I believe that Mr. Zinser is no longer fit to serve as an inspector general. And this is from, and there's other contents of this letter from Ms. Edie Bernice Johnson, ranking member, House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. I think the President of the United States will have, this is an easy task, right? Uh-huh. It would be just as easy as pardoning the turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
In this case, we're not looking for a pardon, but we want an apology as he walk out the door being fired, and then convene an investigation to look at all of the negative impacts of this failure to treat whistleblowing with credibility and with respect, because those people coming to knock on the door, daring to challenge and the system and speak out, it's their right to do that. But if they've been processed and hammered down and beaten down and illegally fired and what have you, I think the president should take this as being a feather in his hat to immediately fire this guy.
Yeah, not only fire him, but have some reconciliation to those under him, you know, who submitted investigations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Tenure, you know, come up with some kind of resolution, because this is just.
What if I wanted to develop a ferry that travels between the islands of Hawaii within the different islands, and I want to build a ferry, and obviously we got to get a environmental impact statement, right? And you can do all of that, and I am assigned to that, and there's a biologist who comes aboard and goes out to sea and look to see on the test run and find out that, oh, look, behind us, in the process of going through all these islands on these days, we ground up, hit 45 sea turtles, and to include 6 leatherbacks. Now, I'm just making this up, but just to give you an idea. And, by the way, we hit 11 whales and just nailed them, killed them. And the pups are, each one of them had a pup. And we put that in there. And so all that is in there about this ferry. And somehow it does not make it into the actual report. And then, therefore, this biologist filed a complaint to say, here's my actual report, here's my actual observations, and here's what happened, Mr. Tosato. But you, for some reason, told me to take it out. You and your minions gathered around me, and I start to feel the pressure, and I took it out, so I reworded it. Because I knew that my child couldn't eat, my house I'd lose it, I wouldn't have a job, and so therefore to do the best thing I could do to survive. Because I also know that Zinser, sitting at the highest level, who would police you, doesn't care, and beat up on whistleblowers. That's what my concerns are, ladies and gentlemen, with this whole issue. This is not make-believe. If the police is behaving in a fashion that whistleblowing is a nuisance or an irritant, so we must hammer them down, then that means across the board throughout the nation we'll see this, if we're ever privy to these informations, to see that there is a conspiracy of sort within National Marine Fisheries Service to quieten and silence the person that's going to tell the truth. Go ahead, Liz.
Well, I would say that, it's a culture within NAMFS and within the Department of Commerce that is just oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the IG employees went through the same thing. But I think if we don't really hold them accountable, that it's going to get worse, because
mm-hmm.
as the stocks are depleted, there's going to be more pressure between the different groups, and they're going to be putting more pressure on NAMFS, and they have their way with Congress as well. And so there's just going to be a lot of pressure on the biologists who are there to record, the unbiased events as they occur.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know what's really neat about this situation? I hearken back to the treatment that Mr. Tosato has given me, extended toward me on my request. It's just simply ask questions that have been put out there by already just freely by the contractor and other volunteers about the quote, the facts surrounding the death of this monk seal N24. And her pup that she miscarried, and then and possibly linked to their hurried actions to trap her, transport her, but then ignore the real impact, or explore or pay attention to what real impacts their actions had on the death of that animal and her pup. But that's okay. But the joy is, it's a pleasure when someone ignore you and then just blow you off. And so then you don't, they're not here, but my extended invite still stands. And if you never answer me, I'm more motivated to keep talking. And in doing so, I suspect that whoever it is that heard the earlier conversation sent me these documents. And then it gives rise to an occasion to meet with Liz and have her on air and share her story and hardship, that to show that it's not just one incident. But throughout the system, it's corrupt. And if we can get rid of that player, Mr. Zinser, and his underlings, who have been documented to retaliate against whistleblowers and operate unethically, well, then Mr. Tosato, when the door closes on him, I think the door might close on you, because there are policies here that you're implementing and silence, and you're now on the hunt for Red October. I mean, I know that's your history of military tactics and whatever, but this is a civilian world. And when your boss beat up on whistleblowers, don't think that you can freely adopt that same stance, because some of us don't take it so kindly. And we'll be asking that for your removal. So if you never answer me, it's okay. I understand. And if you are going to be hunting for the leaks in the office, just make sure you don't fire them because they were whistleblowers. Use your imagination to come up with better explanations. And I think you'll be tasked with doing that. And then we can get you to set you straight and maybe see you walk out the door. But anyway, Liz, this observer program is something that is so critical that we don't know the value of it. And I've come to learn that when people want to take something good and do away with it, and implement the non-human entity or element. Something's wrong with that. And should we trust it?
Yeah, especially without any peer review to whether it's effective or not.
Mm-hmm. And the troublesome part is that it's not like I'm paranoid that these people are dishonest and I'm taking the liberty of labeling them. I have a history as well as you, a knowledge, firsthand knowledge of the shenanigans, and I'm borrowing your word now, the shenanigans that have been presented and how all of this is wrapped up, whether it's tostado or potato. They come in and they don't serve the public. They serve the sea god or something, or the sea goddess over there at the Western Pacific Fisheries Council. They don't serve the people. And now I'm learning why they don't. Because if you got a guy that's supposed to be investigating you and punishing you and holding you accountable, and he's just as guilty as you are, we are left to our own accord, demise. We're doomed, and so are the species that we supposedly are protecting. And in that, Tosado has a great responsibility, does he not? His blanket covers a lot of things, am I right? Fishery species, marine mammal, and birds, and all of that, correct?
Oh, yeah. And the observer program.
And circle hooks and not circle hooks, closed areas and no closed areas, or, you know, all of those things come into and yet can't comment on the death of a monk seal that you forcibly took while pregnant on a beach and bounced her around the back of a pickup truck and then turn around and go, well, we're exonerated because it showed up with toxoplasmosis, and so therefore our hands are clean. Wow. So I guess if that's the way they operate, and they know the public was watching. And my last comment with this subject is that, and we're going to have more discussions because I did, in fact, get some more information. It's just as revealing late last night or this morning. But I believe that we need to pay attention to this because National Marine Fisheries Service is the ultimate party responsible for in the environmental impact statements on whether certain activities, whether it's military activities or what have you. And so I know for a fact there are a number of people who would love to speak out, as that Deloitte review did, show that 70% of them would leave Pyro office right away. So I would love to be standing over there as they go leaving and passing me the information. I wish it would be my lucky day, huh, Liz?
Yeah, yeah. If people could speak freely.
Yeah. But
it'd be a nice world.
You haven't been here for a while to really be as intimate as you were when you lived here. But, it is so secretive that they spent millions of dollars to move to Ford Island. Yeah, and so supposedly an agency that is serving the public and blah, 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 right? You got to get on the bus to go over there and have top secret clearance practically and be scrutinized and poked and probed before you can go in and ask them a question.
Yeah.
What does that suggest? And I can imagine...
barricading themselves.
Yeah, and imagine being a whistleblower on Ford Island and have to walk that long walk across that bridge. You know, and people not understanding. I guess no one out there will tell them, but I'm going to try to be as clear and as concise as I can. I have my little antics, but the facts are the fact. Congress writing a letter saying you're unfit for business and you are the integrity part of the agency. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Any closing comments or anything?
If you can come up with a way of disguising voices, I'm sure you'd be able to get some observers to talk some more. But right now they're pretty scared for their job because they have no job protections.
Oh yeah, well, you know, I wish I can train them to talk like I used to talk in Mississippi. Hey y'all, come on out here. There's a lot of crime going on over there. Would that, maybe that wouldn't work though, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah, but the truth be told, whatever language is spoken in, there is something wrong in Denmark with this National Marine Fisheries Service and the OIG that guides it and monitors it and enforces the rules. All kidding aside, I am concerned. Honestly, I mean, you know. So anyway.
Thank you for having me on and giving me inspiration to take this back up again. I am going to do it. I'm going to go to the these members.
Yeah. See,
if
you're successful in doing that, we, the public, win. The resources win.
Yeah.
The marine mammals win. And I had one little comment that I want to share with those volunteers out there running around putting a rope around the Monk's Hill. Go read and spend some time reading about these guys that got you out there standing in the rain, running out there filming the pup. The pups, that's what they do. They lay on the beach and give birth. There's nothing newsworthy about it, okay, first of all. Secondly, running out there and putting a rope around it, and then the Monk's Hill says, well, you know, I think it's a little chill here and the sun's over there. I'm going to move. And now you run over with the rope. Let's do this, folks, you volunteers out there. Don't become a mouthpiece for an entity that is corrupt from top to bottom. Don't become that. Don't be placated. Don't be used and abused. Lend yourself to communicating science. Stay away from things like, well, the science is in. Toxoplasmosis is responsible for killing the Monk Seal. And yet the people that supposedly you're quoting that provided the science are saying it appears and it seems like, and you're out preaching as if it's gospel. So at least be respectful of yourselves and not picking up and running out there and meddling with people and telling them to stay away. We appreciate you having the love and concern, but there's something greater, more sinister, and that is the lying on top. The people are lying. When a Monk's Hill is Monk's Hill goes blind, I want to hear them tell me. We looked at and saw that we treated these Monk's Hills with antibiotics. And you know antibiotics, you shouldn't be in the sun when you take antibiotics, and it could hurt your eyes. So maybe some of the seals are blinded from that. I'm just saying maybe. But don't tell me they're blinded because Britney Spears walked by or drove by and they blinded by the light. That's some nonsense. Tell me that you looked at all things, if the food had no iodine, if you didn't provide them crustaceans or whatever. But don't tell me they went blind for some stupid reason and you're out there passing the word along as if it's fact when it's all fiction. But again, the last word is the agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Oceanic Atmospheric Agency. It's no wonder they handle anything marine mammal that interacts with fisheries. That's dolphins, whales, right? And a few others. And seals are under the purview, and turtles are under the purview of the National Marine Fisheries Service, Department of Commerce, so that they can issue license to kill without any science if they wanted to. And so therefore, I'm concerned that at this pace, if in 2015 this thing raises its head every time I look at it and it says that nothing has changed and in fact gotten worse. And so when you have a layer of insulating people and killing off whistleblowers, so using a term loosely, then we have no hope. We can say goodbye to many of these species that we're supposedly protecting. So anyway, Liz, thank you so very much for joining in.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it, and we'll have to talk again, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
And keep us posted. You want to come back? We'd love to.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah,
alrighty.
We've got a lot more ground to cover.
Alrighty, my friend.
Just the surface.
Thank you. And give your website again, so I'm sure that there are some people out there that would love to look at some of the things and see what you're up to.
Yeah, it's www.apo-observers.org.
Okay, and thank you so much, Liz.
I appreciate the talking with you.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Aloha. Bye-bye.
Black is the color of my true love's hair. His face so soft and wondrous fair.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.